7. This is ABC Radio Brisbane, where it is 18 minutes past 9. Ever there was a day to stop what you're doing and cast your eyes to the sky, today is the day because it's International Astronomy Day. Michael Cowley is an astrophysicist and one of Australia's best astronomers and joins us in the studio. Morning, Michael.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Delighted to have you, about someone who looks to the stars to find out more about the world. How did you get into astronomy?
Oh, good story. I was actually working in a bank just across the river here in Brisbane.
I'm sorry, you were working in a bank and then you became an astrophysicist.
Yeah, exactly. I think I had enough of the world of finance and decided to see if I can move away from money, move away from people and put my head in the stars. Unfortunately, in astronomy, you still need to deal with money and people. So I didn't escape it. But yes, I made a bit of a career change about a decade ago now and haven't looked back, really.
A whole decade in astronomy. So what do you see when you look at the stars?
Mostly ones and zeros, to be serious. I guess the days of looking through a telescope at night is a bygone era now, and
really?
It's mostly just computer data. So we let the telescopes capture the data for us, and then we sit there and analyse the raw data that comes in from those telescopes. So, I mean, you can still create and look at beautiful imagery, as you see from the James Webb Space Telescope recently producing some lovely, mm-hmm. beautiful images. But to be honest, it's mostly numbers and statistics that I perform in my day-to-day duties.
And that tells you about the universe.
It does, indeed. So I'm interested in knowing how the universe began, where it's going. In particular, I like to look at galaxies, how they evolve over cosmic time, including our own Milky Way galaxy. And even how things like exotic objects such as black holes may impact galaxies and how they evolve as well through time. So,
do you ever feel as an astronomer when you're looking at all of that and how much time it's taken to create those galaxies, to create black holes?
Mm.
You're never going to know the end story, are you, Michael?
I guess that's the beauty of it. It's, you know, trying to understand the unknown. And while we might only scratch the surface, it's exciting. There's always something new to look forward to. I know I'm not going to go in tomorrow and go to work and solve all of those questions. There's always going to be more and more and more. And so I can do my best to try and answer as many as I can and then educate others to continue that effort into the future. Do the best we can, I guess.
Well, you're not looking at telescopes, like looking up into the stars at night, all of that sort of thing. You're taking the data and analysing it.
Mm.
We still obviously need telescopes, don't we?
Oh, for sure.
And where are they? Like, look, where are the telescopes in Brisbane?
So we've got ground-based telescopes and space-based ones. The ones in Brisbane, obviously, not the best location to have them in Brisbane. Across the river on top of one of the buildings in the university I work at, QUT, we do have a telescope. It's not the best place for it, given that I can see most of the buildings are covering half the night sky. We've also got light pollution. The building vibrates. So that's just an education telescope to train students and individuals to learn how to operate telescopes. But as we move out perhaps into some of the more regional areas, that's where you'd want to locate them, away from light pollution, away from the big buildings. But within Australia, probably the most important telescope I can think of at the moment is the Australian Square Kilometre Array Pathfinder, which is located out in the Murchison region of
yes.
Western Australia.
Yeah.
On the lands of the Wajarra people, and an excellent large radio antenna array, I think about 36 dishes out there, and it's essentially creating like a 3D Google map of the entire night sky in the radio. And so that is probably going to be, once it's fully constructed, one of the most prominent and important telescopes, not only in Australia but around the world.
Well, that part of the world is known for its dark skies. And recently, the full eclipse of the sun occurred in Exmouth, which is in that region.
Yes.
How important is it to have dark skies in order to see beyond?
Oh, obviously very important. Light pollution, obviously, in the cities is a big deal. I've had a dabble in the lighting industry myself, and there are rules and regulations with regards to where we aim lights and where we put lights, trying to avoid light pollution. And it's not just for astronomy, it's also for environmental reasons and also for people as well. We don't want to have light pollution as well. But yeah, as the light starts to glow more and more, it makes it more difficult for us to perform our observations from the ground. And so we need to weigh up these options. Do we start sending more telescopes up into space, which is obviously a very expensive endeavour? Mm-hmm. Or do we need to probably regulate better to reduce the amount of light pollution and find more dark sky regions within Australia and around the world to allow us to continue performing our observations of the night sky?
I can first remember hearing about light pollution a couple of decades ago now, where I did a story with someone who was leading a campaign, who was an amateur astronomer, but leading a campaign to reduce light pollution. And as a result, I've just noticed light, or the way lighting is used since then. And I think it's come a long way. Is it improving or not?
I think it is.
There's more of it.
I mean, I've noticed with the more implementation of regulations and rules, we see different types of lighting technology with different colour variants as well, which means that they're not as bad as they used to be as before. There's different rules about where they're angled and where they're located. So I think there is improvement from that perspective, but the fact that we continue to encroach on more and more rural land and the population continues to expand is that probably the net overall result is not good.
Sorry to hear that. In terms of the field of astronomy, you've just shattered my illusions that it's not about staring at the night sky and that it's about analysing data. How many people are attracted to astronomy? Is it a healthy field of study?
I think it's a healthy field of study. It's a challenging one because I think everyone has an interest in astronomy. It's usually something that many people are drawn to. Whenever there's a news story that's on about space, things like the eclipse was obviously a big deal. Even the number of students who come and take my astronomy classes, there's an enormous amount of students that are interested in them. But I know not all of them are going to go on and become astronomers and astrophysicists, and that's okay. They still pick up a unique set of transferable skills that they can apply to so many other areas of science, technology, engineering and math, and that's what is important. So we can still grab those students that excel within astronomy and astrophysics and hopefully, you know, lead them on into the field. But those that don't, they will still go on and do great and wonderful things as well.
And use that knowledge
And still use that knowledge, exactly, yes.
At the moment, every day we hear about AI and ChatGPT.
Yes.
What impact does AI have on astronomy, if any?
Sure. Well, first of all, I guess it makes it harder for me to grade assessments at university, but we'll keep that aside.
Yes, that's another topic entirely.
That's another thing altogether. Like I mentioned before, it's looking at ones and zeros, looking at the raw data that's coming in. There's telescopes which are just transmitting a tremendous amount of data to us, including new telescopes such as the James Webb and the upcoming Vera C. Rubin telescope, which I know being built in the ground in Chile is one of the largest telescopes ever constructed, something of the order of 10 petabytes of data.
I don't even know what a petabyte is. Something to do with your feet?
A thousand terabytes or is it a million or a billion gigabytes? It's a lot bigger than the space you got in your phone, that's for sure. Yeah. So, I think I remember something. If you took every movie that has ever been made in 4K resolution, the highest definition, you could fit it all onto something like around about a 10 petabyte disk.
Right, and it's very big then.
It's big, very big. And
there are big skies in Chile then,
exactly.
Lots of deserts.
But the Vera C. Rubin is going to be getting around about 1 petabyte of data per year of data. So it's a massive amount. And there's never any chance that one human or even all of the astronomers in the world are going to be able to analyse all of that data, at least within our lifetime, my lifetime. And so using things like AI and machine learning techniques to look for trends in data, to look for patterns in data, we can train it to do similar things that we used to do. That helps us.
And it's handy.
It's handy. It allows us to take our human resources and apply them elsewhere while we let the machines do the work for us. It's maybe not as bad as the ATM taking over for the cash register. But yeah, it certainly helps us out a lot and we can focus our efforts on other things.
Because AI looks to the past so it can model for the future.
Exactly.
Looking to the past, First Nations people have been looking at the skies in Australia for 60,000 years.
Yes.
The dark skies. Dark emu will come to mind for a lot of people because that's the dark shape of the emu.
Mm-hmm.
What can we learn from First Nations people about the stars?
Oh, look, I think it's a very important topic. Obviously, if you go and grab any history book on the history of astronomy, you'll usually find that the first chapter is not dedicated to the Indigenous astronomers of Australia. It's dedicated to perhaps the ancient Egyptians or the Greeks. Mm-hmm. And so, first of all, recognition, putting recognition into the textbooks and into our teachings about the Indigenous Australians and the fact that they performed astronomy so long ago, like you said, up to 60,000 years ago. Advancements in recognition and reconciliation is very important, but it's also the fact that they've been observing for so many thousands of years, and so that allows us to fill in a timeline, a gap that we do not have. We use ancient texts from Chinese to paint a picture of when, for example, a supernova explosion of a star may have taken place. And today we can look at the remnant, but we can never go back in time and look at when it happened. But by finding these texts and finding the history books of when it potentially happened, we can suddenly put a timeline on that, and that helps inform our science. And so the same thing can be potentially done for the history of the Australian Indigenous peoples. If we can perhaps put a timeline on the astronomy that they've observed, that'll inform our science moving forward as well. So there's lots of benefits to include it in our teachings and also to include it in our research and science today.
And to keep those stories alive.
Exactly.
Michael, we could talk forever on astronomy, and I know nothing about it, but it's been a delight having you here this morning on ABC Brisbane.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. My name is Cathy Schnitzling. It is 29 minutes past nine. A little bit of music just to take us up to the news headlines.
There's a target on my back. There's a bullet in my name. Tearing holes.